listening to the Daily Gold Podcast, covering precious metals, the junior mining sector, and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roy Byrne.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Daily Gold Podcast. Thank you for joining us today. I have with me a friend of the show, one of our favorite guests, Dan Norsini, is on the line. Dan, it's good to have you back. How have you been?
Hey, great. Very good, Jordan. Great to be back as well. It's been a little while since we chatted, so we got lots to talk about. Lots going on in these markets to play, that's for sure.
Absolutely, and let's start it off with one of our favorite markets, gold. What do you see happening right now with respect to gold and the gold stocks? I know that's a question. You could take that in many different places, but I guess first and foremost, we see gold has kind of been capped around 1250 this week. Do you think this could be a meaningful peak, or could gold possibly rally a little bit more?
Well, if you base it just off of momentum, yeah, it could rally more. And here's the deal with gold, and you and I chatted a little bit about this just ahead of this interview, but gold has really been moving up higher, I guess, since if you really go back and take a look at its daily chart and also these miners. But if you really look back at the beginning of this month, you know, we had a nice rally going in, you know, to start off the year. Then we had that sell-off in gold, you know, toward the end of the January. But now it's been rallying strongly again. And most of this, Jordan, in my view, is due to a perception, or let's call it a shift, in the thinking of traders and investors when it came to what we call the Trump trade. I mean, that's the definition, the name I'm calling it. And by the Trump trade, I basically mean the, let's call it the risk-on trade. It's kind of a more familiar term. You and I have talked about that in times past, you know, risk-on, risk-off. Risk-on being a pro-growth trade, risk-off being a slow-growth, more of a deflationary-type trade. Well, the Trump trade is basically your risk-on, your reflation, or your pro-growth trade. And basically, after, and this goes back to the U.S. election, you know, all the way back in November. But once the election results were clear and Trump won the presidency, you had a massive shift in positioning among traders and investors in regards to their expectations for the U.S. economic growth prospects. And that was really because, you know, you had the Obama administration, which was not a business-friendly administration. It was pretty heavy on regulation, no effort on tax reform, nothing to do anything to encourage American companies to bring home overseas earnings that were stashed, you know, to avoid taxes, et cetera. Hillary Clinton would have basically been a continuation of the Obama policies. And so when Trump won that election, everybody who had more or less prepared for a Clinton victory was forced to shift position. And so you had a huge run back into the risk assets. And so you had equity started getting bid up. You had the Japanese yen selling off. You had the bond market selling off. You had, of course, as the yen went down, as the bonds went down, and traders were in a mood for risk, you had gold being pressured tremendously. And then what happened was, all of a sudden, you know, I guess it really was in December, call it December, you know, you started seeing that take place. And then as we kind of got in toward the first of the year, people started looking at some of the things that were Trump was dealing with as far as difficulties. And it was on issues that were not so much market related. You had issues that were immigration what came to the forefront. You had the Supreme Court justice that, you know, you were talking about. You had Trump making some tweets about renegotiating NAFTA. And anytime you had, you know, the market sort of concerned about protectionism, or in some cases people refer to it as mercantilism, you know, investors got nervous. And then what you had was you had a big safe haven trade that kicked off again. So all the positioning that took place after the Trump election win in November then was flipped. Everything got flipped. Everybody reversed. They started turning those trades, you know, and going the other direction. And so all of a sudden you started seeing money coming back into the gold market. You started seeing money going back into the yen. The yen started rallying. You see the bond market started to kick higher, and interest rates actually started working lower. And people basically got to the point where they're saying, you know what? The Fed had told us back in their December statement that they were going to shoot for 3 interest rate hikes in 2017, And yeah, we actually agreed that that might be a strong probability given the fact that the Trump administration was coming in with a pro-growth agenda. But once it looked like that agenda was sort of on the back burner to these other issues, and you didn't really get the confirmation on some of the economic data we were looking for, people said, you know what, I don't know about a 3 interest rate hike. Matter of fact, the market dialed the probability down closer to 2, and they dialed the first rate hike probability not until June in the Fed funds futures market. So as the interest rate market started to shift their expectations for a Fed rate hike, you started seeing that those interest rates moving down, and that in turn put a bid under the gold market, which pushed it up so strongly. So really what we're seeing in gold, in my opinion, Jordan, is simply a shift in trader expectations or the perception of when Trump is actually going to get around to moving on the policies that he campaigned on that directly affect the market. And by that, I mean tax reform, regulatory reform, and his promise about giving a, let's call it a tax holiday or some sort of reduction in the tax rate to U.S. companies to basically incentivize them to bring home from overseas these what some people believe is as high as $2 trillion worth of earnings that are parked overseas that U.S. companies are holding over there. They're not bringing them home because they don't want to pay the taxes on them. So if the market becomes convinced that the Trump administration now is going to make those market-oriented reforms their priority, I think you'll then see the currency markets and the interest markets respond accordingly. And in that case, then you could see some pressure coming into the gold market. It's simply a matter of if interest rates are going to start moving higher, if you got a pro-growth policy in, you're not going to see the need for safe havens. And you're going to see people saying, you know what, if he gets that tax reform through here, and particularly if they make it retroactive, like there's been some chatter, they might make it retroactive to the beginning of this year, then you'll see investors sort of dialing up expectations for U.S. economic growth. That, in turn, will bring interest rates up on the long end of the curve. It'll start to kick them a little higher, and it'll raise the probability of Fed rate hikes. And, again, that would then support the dollar, which would probably put a little bit of pressure on gold. But right now, we don't have a certainty on that. We don't have a clear conviction. You know, Trump yesterday, in front of the airline executives for the first time in probably a month, actually mentioned tax reform. And he said, yeah, we're going to have a – I think his words were a phenomenal tax reform package, and it'll be out in 2 to 3 weeks. We're going to get it out. Well, I mean, I don't know if that's true or not. Who knows what the Congress's schedule is going to be on that. But that sort of shifted everything. And you noticed yesterday when he came out and he made that speech and that was publicized and it went down the news wires and, the TV, the business shows reported on it, you saw then gold and gold stocks got hit very hard. The HUI got hit. It retreated from its 200-day moving average. It moved down. You know, gold was, like you said, was doing really well. It had made it up there around 1250, and then bam, it just got slammed. And that was because you had a reversal again in the safe haven trades. If the tax reform package was back on the table, and that was going to be a thing that was going to move soon, okay, fine. You're going to see a risk on, or the Trump trade, or the reflation, or the pro-growth trade coming on in the safe haven trade for jettison. That's where the pressure on gold came from yesterday. And today, you initially saw a continuation of that pressure on gold in the overnight trading, particularly in Asia and in the early morning in Europe, and, of course, here in New York, trading in North America. But then what happened during the session is, even though the equity markets were strong, you began to see the copper markets shoot up. And as copper shot up, it pulled silver up, and that pulled gold up as well. But gold's still down on the day. However, the mining shares did very well, particularly the silver-oriented mining shares did very, very well, which, as you and I discussed, in an environment in which growth is expected, in which you have sort of a pro-growth business policy, a pro-growth or a business-friendly administration, I would expect the silver to do much better than gold. I would expect silver to outperform gold in that sort of environment, and I think that's what we actually saw today. You had something that made a lot of sense to me when you saw silver leading gold. Silver was up over 1% today. Gold at the moment is down about 0.15%, and you actually got silver leading gold, which is what you would expect when you see equities rallying, the dollar firm, and the yen weak.
Now, just one last thing on gold. I want to get your view on the COT, which we were talking about beforehand. and how gold has rallied $125 an ounce, but we've barely seen an increase in the speculative long positions. What's going on there? How can you explain that?
Yeah, I explain it by a lot of disbelief in the rally initially. You know, they always will tell you bull markets climb a wall of worry. Well, that's a wall of worry that you're seeing. In other words, you have there's two things that happened in there, Jordan. Number one, the same time that you had the gold rally start, let's just go from the beginning of the year. Let's just take it from January 1st, okay? You had a build in the hedge fund long position, you know, the outright long. They jumped in there with about 20,000 longs. But over the same period of time, this is what to me is interesting, they've also dropped a considerable number of shorts, about 20,000 shorts. So what you had sort of the combination where you had guys that were pressing this market down for the reason that I mentioned earlier, where, you know, the Trump trade, the reflation trade, the risk on trade, guys were willing to sell gold in that environment, and so they got short. But then as the perception shifted that, you know, those market-friendly policies were going to come to the forefront of the Trump administration's concerns, then all of a sudden the shorts began to get nervous in there. They go, well, wait a minute, if he's not going to push tax reform, he's not going to push regulatory reform, and he's not doing those other things, well, where is the growth rate that we're looking for, you know, the expected surge in the growth, where's that going to come from? And when is he going to get around to focusing on it? So the shorts in there lost their firepower. They lost their conviction to press it. And instead they decided, you know what, I don't think I'm going to get much more downside in this right now, in this environment. So they started to cover. At the same token, you didn't have a huge rush of buying in there from the hedge funds, you know, new buying, but you did have some. You had enough. So the combination of some new long positions by the hedge funds and some short covering by that same category was enough to, you know, to give you some pretty good buying in there, and that's what drove the gold price up. And I think the reason that you're not seeing just a huge surge in hedge fund buying goes back to what we talked about again to kick off the interview, Jordan, was that there's a lot of people out there who still think that you're going to get that pro-growth tax reform and that regulatory reform passed by the Republican-led Congress, and you're going to get it signed and enacted into law by the, you know, by the Trump administration. And if that's the case, you know, you're going to see some pretty good growth potential here in the U.S. And that's what the equity markets are reacting to. I mean, think about it. We've seen a new all-time high in the S&P 500 this week. We saw a surge in the Nasdaq. We saw a new all-time high in the Dow. As a matter of fact, the Dow pushed through 20,000 and left it in dirt. So, you know, you've got a lot of investors who are expecting growth, you know, to pick up here in the U.S. You've got technology stocks are surging. Biotechs are getting a bit underneath them. You're seeing movement up in medical devices. You're seeing in the aerospace defense sector. That's moving higher. And now this week we've seen the financials get a bit underneath them, as well as the energy shares again. So you've got that environment where investors are willing to take on risk. And so I think that gives a lot of the hedge funds some hesitancy to really pile onto the long side in the gold market, because, you know, you're looking at this idea, so do we want to sort of put on a safe haven trade, or do we want to get into a growth trade? And I think that's where the hesitation is coming from, which is why you don't see a huge build in hedge fund long positions in the gold market at this point.
And last thing on gold, also let's talk about the GLD, because we were also talking about that beforehand and how up until a week or so ago, from that point and back to the election, there was literally no buying whatsoever in the GLD, despite the fact that gold rebounded. So, and I know you've noted that we've seen some demand come back to the market. What do you make of what's been going on with GLD the past couple months?
Yeah, that's been fascinating to watch that too, Jordan. As you know, that's one of my favorite indicators to sort of gauge where Western-based investors are. You know, we always know that, I mean, India and China are very reliable gold buyers, and particularly down at what they consider, you know, bargain prices or value prices. They're solid. They're always going to be buying over there. But when you want to get when you want to see a rally in gold prices, you know, that shoots up higher, you want to see that Western-based investors' demand for gold. And typically, I in the past have used that as a sentiment indicator, and it's been pretty good, pretty reliable. The reported holdings tend to move up when gold is rallying, and they have a tendency to move down when gold is selling off. Well, we got sort of a divergence in that, in January to kick off the year, and we started seeing gold itself, the metal itself was moving higher, but the GLD reporting holdings were going nowhere. Matter of fact, they were actually down for about the first 3 weeks of January. GLD was shedding gold. You know, if you take the starting point, let's call it December 31st of last year, and you look at that as a starting point, the holdings in gold, the reported holdings were going down while the metal was going up, which is something odd. You don't see that very often. And initially, that made me sort of leery about this rally simply because I viewed it as people, you know, large Western-based investors, you know, some of the big names that were owning gold and would use the GLD to do that, they were using the rally and the price of the metal to actually get out of gold. That's why you had a drop in the holding. So that concerned me. You know, even though, you know, you had the HUI was doing pretty good, you had the metal itself obviously was doing well, you weren't getting a confirmation. I like to call it a triple signal where gold is going higher, the GLD reported holdings are going higher, and the gold shares are going higher. That's a nice confirmation when gold is rallying. So we sort of had a 2 out of 3 scenario where you had the shares going higher, the metal going higher, but the GLD holdings going down. And that was sort of odd. But then here now, over the last really call it about 2 weeks, you know, week and a half, you've seen a big resurgence back in GLD now, which to me makes a lot of sense. When you have the HUI moving like it had and the gold price running up toward 1250, and GLD now is starting to move higher, you know, as far as the reported holdings go, that's good. That's a confirmation. As a matter of fact, you know, we're up about, I think around 18 tons, if I remember correctly, almost 19 tons of gold in there since the start of the year now as of yesterday. I'm not sure where we are today. So, you know, now we're sort of back on track where they're all moving higher together. The question is, what comes next? You know, if the metal starts to move lower, are we going to see the holdings in gold go down or not? And so that's something that, you know, none of us really know. We're just going to have to wait and see, like, and monitor it, you know, on a week-by-week basis, and in my case, kind of a day-by-day basis, to see if you're going to see a steady demand now going back into GLD, or you're going to see some of these guys start to have some second thoughts and maybe start selling gold if the equity markets keep moving higher. So that, to me, will be a real key as well. I mean, are these guys going to stick with their own gold holdings, GLD holdings, if the equities are still going up? And that's a big unknown. Right now they are, but will they going to do that next week? I don't know. I guess we'll find out soon enough.
And what do you make of the – I guess it's a two-part question. I guess the first part would be the recent relative strength of silver against gold. I know you touched on that a little bit with copper, but maybe give me your thoughts on that going forward, and also the relative strength of the mining shares, because they have been just really outpacing the metals, especially GDXJ.
Yeah, they really have been. Again, good sign for a rally, you know, in the metals. You like to see that, because for the longest time, you know, you weren't getting any interest in those shares. Let me just touch on this briefly. I'll go back to the silver as well. I know you like to do the junior miners, which is probably where all the speculative, you know, a lot more of the hotter speculative money flows. So that's probably a better sentiment indicator when it comes to the shares and the HUI. But for me, just graphing the HUI is a little bit easier to work with. I guess I'm just more familiar with it. But, you know, what I noticed about the HUI this week was that it ran all the way up to the 200-day moving average. That's a big deal, Jordan. I mean, you know, we had not been up to the 200-day moving average in the mining shares since they lost it after the election in November. I mean, that was the amazing thing. I mean, we are right back to where we were in the HUI in terms of that 200-day moving average as we were right after the U.S. election. And you remember, it was after the U.S. election that the mining shares just imploded. And again, the reason being, you know, nobody wanted to safe haven trade at that point. We're all going pro growth. We're going reflation trade. We're going, you know, risk on trade. You know, who needs the mining shares? Who needs gold at that point? And they just walloped those things and beat them with an ugly stick. But now they've come all the way back, and that thing was knocking on the door of the 200-day moving average again. It's almost like the last 3 months just disappeared. That's how much positioning, you know, shifting you had taken place. And so yesterday, let me back up and say it this way. Wednesday, the HUI hit the 200-day moving average, you know, for the first time since November. Then yesterday, it went through it early in the session, but then once the news broke that Trump, you know, was giving that speech in front of those airline executives and mentioned tax reform, then it just collapsed down below the 200-day moving average. Well, a lot of technicians will tell you that when you come to a key resistance level on a chart and you watch the market, you'll move up and test it, and then it falls sharply away from that. That's a short-term technical sell signal. You're going to get all short-term oriented traders are going to take that signal. They're going to come in and sell it. And that's exactly what you saw. I mean, the HUI was down hard on the opening today. But the interesting thing is it basically made its low on the opening bell. It did nothing but come up the rest of the session, and it sort of slowly moved higher. And it didn't just, hit the low and sit there. It actually ground up toward the rest of the session, and it went out and closed out near its high today, which is very interesting because it hit the 10-day moving average, and now it's kind of stuck between the 200-day moving average on the top, the 10-day on the bottom. And honestly, at this point, I don't know which way it wants to go. I mean, I could make a case yesterday that this thing was going to see a lot of sharper selling because of that failure at the 200-day moving average. But the price action today is like, okay, well, maybe not. Maybe we're going to go up and test the 200-day moving average again. But if it does, if it can clear that 200-day moving average next week, Jordan, that's going to be a big deal from a technical analysis standpoint because that's going to bring a lot more of the longer-term oriented investors back into the shares. You know, a lot of these markets are short-term driven, but the longer-term oriented guys, more of your long-term, let's call it your guys that maybe have more of a macro view, they look at that 200-day moving average. It's a key level for them. And if the shares, if the HUI gets above that, and it's an important thing, if it stays above it, it can maintain its footing, you're going to see some more buying come into those mining shares from longer-term oriented investors because they're going to be buying from a macro standpoint, not from a momentum-based short-term standpoint like so many of those hedge funds are. Those guys tend to be a little bit more patient. They're willing to take a position and sit on. They're not in and out so often like the hedge funds are. So next week, to me, is setting up to be a very interesting week in the miners to see how it's going to handle that 200-day moving average. So, you know, that covers the HUI but and the shares to a certain extent. But let me go back and address the first part of your question with the silver market. To me, in a pro-growth environment, if we've had a shift in sentiment now where we're going back to growth, again, and that's all based on the expectation that, you know, the Trump message yesterday that the tax reform package is 2 to 3 weeks out and we're going to actually see it. All right? Well, if that's the case, then I think what you'll start to see is a resumption of the movement that we were getting in that gold-silver ratio where gold begins to underperform silver. In other words, silver outperforms gold. So the ratio begins to move in favor of silver. I mean, we are at one point, where were we? Jordan, you might even be up more up on this than I was. We were at one point, we're over 80 in that gold to silver ratio. And if you look at a chart, you know, a long-term chart, take a look at a monthly perspective. I mean, you get up above 80, it doesn't stay up there very long. Sort of an average, you're around, I don't know, 50, 52, 55, seems to be kind of a mean, an average area where the ratio tends to trade on average. You know, it's been higher than that, it's been lower than that, but sort of as a meandering sideways, it tends to move in that area between 50 and 60. Well, if we get a scenario where traders start to think we're going to get growth, and growth in turn brings inflation, at least, you know, it kills deflation fears, that's for sure. I've always been of the view that silver is a better metal to own in times of inflation. I'm one of these guys, and I know this probably will bring me the ire of some of the listeners, but I don't typically view silver more as a safe haven metal as much as I do gold. Silver to me has, because of its dual properties, both an industrial metal and a precious metal, it's a quasi both. If you see a poor economic performance, a deflationary scenario, silver prices really have time they struggle moving higher. But when you see inflation come to the forefront of traders' minds, when traders are looking at growth, you definitely see silver get a bit underneath it, again, because of its industrial uses as well. And so in an environment like that in which you've got metals like copper moving higher, platinum moving higher, palladium moving higher, it's very hard to make a case that silver is going to go down or it's going to underperform gold. And in those scenarios where the rest of the metals are moving higher, particularly industrial metals, silver tends to outperform gold. So in that environment, I think, trades where like guys want to play that from a ratio trade where they want to go long silver and short gold or get long silver-oriented mining shares and short gold-oriented mining shares, you can make some money in that trade. and it mitigates your risk somewhat in the event that you get some reversal because you have some downside protection. So anyhow, that's how I'm looking at silver at the time being. The fact that silver went over $18 today was pretty good, too. It didn't hold it, but it went above it, which is kind of nice on the charts because, again, you're back at levels that you haven't seen since, since November. So you're back to about, almost about a three-month high in there. And so you can see the sentiment shift that's taking place in the silver market based on the action in the daily price chart at this point. And I tell you, if silver can clear $19 on the chart, that's going to be a huge deal because it has not been able to get through 19 for a long time. $19, you get through silver and close above there, particularly if it closes above there on a weekly basis. I think nothing doing, it'll be at $20. Very easy to get to 20 at that point.
Yeah, and I would just add, I mean, looking at the silver chart, just going back the last 3 or 4 years, I mean, the 19, 20, 21, I mean, if this can, I don't know what level it is exactly, but if this can make a weekly or monthly close above 20 or 21, I mean, there's not much in the way of resistance until 27, 28. Do you also see that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Jordan, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of air above that market at that level, a lot of air up there. And see, if you look at the commitment of traders reports, we do have the hedge funds, they are increasing their net long position in that market. That's something worth noting. It's not extreme, but they're definitely moving in, which is kind of what you want to see anyhow. I mean, you want to see some speculative interest on that metal if it's going to move higher. Obviously, you can't move higher unless you have specs in there buying it. But it's nowhere near being overextended. And so while you have some guys in there, you don't have a heavy, heavy big momentum buying it's in there yet. In other words, you don't have the kind of buying it where you see that thing just really starting to shoot up on a day-by-day basis. And you start getting up in those levels where you get above, like you're saying, the $20 level. Let's call it 20-50, 20-21. Boy, I'll tell you what, that's going to bring a lot of momentum-based buying into that market if it can get there. And the thing is, if Trump is successful, if he can get this tax reform going and he can start getting economic growth back above 3%, where you get consistent quarterly readings above 3%, and let's say we even get to 3.5, would be great. I mean, you're going to start to see some inflationary pressures pick up. And in that case, I think you really will see silver move up in that kind of environment. And that, in my own view, that would be the metal I would favor. I would favor silver much more heavily over gold in that kind of environment. Were that to happen, I think you see some really nice results from it. And, some of that you're seeing in these mining shares too, these small miners, and like First Majestic and Hecla. I mean, they, their charts are very, very much improved. So, again, you get some pushes in the metal where you start seeing that metal run above 2021. Those little stocks, those kind of silver mining stocks, you have some good profit potential for people.
Well, on that note, Dan, thanks so much for joining me today. But before I let you go, can you please tell our listeners how they can follow your work and your website and how and where they can go to subscribe?
Sure, Jordan. Thanks for that opportunity. Yeah, they could come over to TraderDan.net, and they come over and take a look at what we've got over there. And we're dealing with a lot of different markets. I mean, we do still talk about the precious metals, but we've been focusing a lot on copper. We're focused a lot on the currencies. And we've shifted our focus somewhat too and try to enlarge it somewhat. We're moving more and looking at 8 different ETFs. So we're looking at different asset sectors that we think money flows are going to come into this year. We're trying to position ourselves ahead of those money flows. And so, we detail those pretty regularly as well, Jordan. So we're covering quite a gamut of markets. And I think there's enough there to interest just about anybody who's got an interest in any particular segment. We're hitting them all. At least we're trying.
Dan, thanks so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to having you back again in the next month or two.
Oh, my pleasure, Jordan. I always enjoy our chats, and I hope this is informative to the readers, and I hope you have as much fun listening to this stuff as you and I have talking about it. So thanks again for having me on. I really appreciate it, Jordan.
Thank you for tuning into the Daily Gold Podcast. For more interviews, editorials, and analysis, log on to thedailygold.com. And for premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.